Our next argument this morning is Al-Saglati against Gonzalez. Mr. Reagan.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Kevin Reka. I represent the petitioner, Abdallah Al-Saglati. This is an asylum claim from a Yemeni national who was claiming that he suffered persecution on account of his political opinion in Yemen. At issue are two questions in this case, whether the judge's adverse credibility finding was supported by substantial evidence, and whether the judge properly exercised his discretion when he indicated that even if he had believed the petitioner's story, that he would have denied asylum as a matter of discretion. Petitioner submits that the adverse credibility finding was not supported by substantial evidence, and that the judge abused his discretion in indicating that he would issue a discretionary denial. As a first matter, the IJ's adverse credibility finding is based largely on conjecture and personal opinion, as not tethered to the facts or record within the case. At first, one of the IJ's main concerns was that he did not believe that Al-Saglati could work for the government at the same time that he continued to openly criticize the government. But the judge does not say, beyond merely believing that this would not happen, why he does not believe this could be a true fact. He does not cite to record evidence, country reports, or other knowledge of what's happening in Yemen to indicate his belief that a person could not work for a government that it also criticized. This court addressed that same issue in Hoard v. Gonzalez, Dong, and Iao, where a knowledge of conditions in the country was nowhere indicated in the opinion by the immigration judge. The judge next...
Well, your argument, as I understand it, is that in Yemen... it is easier to kill a civil servant than to fire him. Is there any support for that in either direct testimony or secondary sources about the way the Yemeni civil service system works? I can imagine that degree of tenure, but it does seem extreme.
I don't know that it's necessarily easier to... Indeed, Mr. Al-Saglati was later fired from his job, as the testimony and the asylum application elicits, as well as an attempt being made on his life. I don't know, based on the record evidence, that it's necessarily easier for the Yemeni government to kill someone who they feel opposes them than to fire them from their post or to cause them to stop their criticism through various means of interrogation, detention, and including even assassination attempts. One of the areas where the judge...
Is this a subject on which one would expect the proponent of the asylum claim to produce some evidence?
It's
very easy in these cases to say, well, the immigration judge didn't show detailed knowledge of the Yemeni civil service system, but whose burden is that?
Well, Your Honor, the country reports do indicate that...
You don't get detailed knowledge of a country's civil service system out of country reports. You get them out of Yemeni law.
Well, and what I was directly referencing, Your Honor, is I know the State Department reports that were submitted with the application either by the government or by the respondent indicate that members of the South Yemen opposition during the time of the Civil War were reincorporated in part into the Yemeni government, but that harassment and persecution of some of those members did still continue.
Well, I don't want to cause you to devote too much of your time to this, because I think we need to get to the second question, which is quite independent of the credibility finding. Is there any doubt about the immigration judge's finding that your client lied to the embassy in order to obtain a visa?
I don't know that we could qualify. He did indicate that he was coming through a visit through
In order to obtain a tourist visa, you have to represent to the agency, to the embassy, that you will come back at the end of your visa, do you not?
Yes, he did misrepresent.
Your client conceded that he never planned to keep that promise.
He did misrepresent himself within that application.
There is obviously then substantial evidence for the proposition that your client obtained entry to the United States by fraud. So why is it not within the discretion of the agency to say that people who obtain entry to the United States by fraud should not be given a benefit?
Well, Your Honor, the asylum laws do contemplate a person who enters the United States through fraudulent documents or through a visitor's visa and then does seek asylum. It does allow a judge to even grant asylum when those issues are present. Matter of
look,
Chen.
Look, I understand the argument that if somebody uses fraud to escape immediate danger, maybe the agency will exercise discretion in his favor. Your client was not in immediate danger. He was in Saudi Arabia at the time. But the question I'm asking is not whether it is legally possible for a person who enters by fraud to be the beneficiary of discretion. The question is whether it is legally required for someone who enters by fraud to be the beneficiary of discretion.
It is not legally required that a judge exercises discretion in favor of a person who enters through a fraudulent mean. That is correct, Your Honor.
But then what would be the problem? Then why is it an abuse of discretion not to give the benefit to this particular defrauder?
Well, Your Honor, if we look at Galaj v. Ashcroft in the Sixth Circuit, which relied on the holding in matter of Chen by the Board of Immigration Appeals, the Sixth Circuit stated that
I'm not asking what the Sixth Circuit held. I'm just asking you to give me a straightforward argument. Why, in words so simple even a judge can understand, is this legally required?
I don't believe it's required that he grant the asylum, but I believe in exercising his discretion, matter of Chen requires that the immigration judge look at the possibility of a well-founded fear of future persecution, which the judge here did not do, as he had found the petitioner to be not credible. I don't believe that the judge properly followed the requirements in matter of Chen to fully exercise his discretion.
Now I'm lost. Are you saying the reason that he can't exercise discretion is that he made some other decision with which you disagree? Because if that's your reason, it's inconsistent with the Supreme Court's holding in INS against Baghamazbad.
I'm not questioning the judge's ability to exercise his discretion. I'm questioning whether he applied the factors that the BIA has laid out in exercising a discretionary grant of asylum, and if he used all those factors in exercising his discretion. Is petitioner's contention that the judge did not apply all of those factors and thus did not properly exercise his discretion? In Galaj, the judge had also found that the petitioner was not credible and thus conducted a cursory examination of a well-founded fear of future persecution. It did not place the rebuttable presumption on the government of showing that there was not a well-founded fear of future persecution. And the Sixth Circuit, applying matter of Chen, found that it was appropriate to remand that issue back to the BIA for fact-finding as a matter of first instance, as it had not occurred either by the immigration judge or by the board. And petitioner believes that by failing to properly follow what matter of Chen requires, the judge did not follow all of the discretionary factors. Certainly, he was free to exercise his discretion because of the means of entering the U.S. through a B-2 visa, but he did not use the factors that are required by the board in which the judge is required to apply.
You know, the thing that concerns me a little is that I don't know that Yemen is going to treat him so badly unless he sounds off. You know, he's been outspoken. Of course, he had a relatively, I guess, prestigious or important government job for a long time, even while he was speaking out. Eventually, he lost the job. This shooting in the night at 100 meters on a dark road in a car, the judge said that's not a very efficient way to assassinate someone, if that's what it was. The assault on his child, they don't know who did it, the police report, whatever. And then he was beat up and whatever, with his toe and things, when he was captured. But otherwise, he and his family still were pretty much left alone. And I'm just wondering, what's the fear of future persecution unless he goes back and gets politically active again and exercises his what is not very free speech?
Well, Your Honor, from my examination of the record, I don't believe that it was fully developed whether or not there was a well-founded fear of future persecution. It seemed that the record focused in large part on the past persecution and that the factual issues of a well-founded fear of future persecution were not adequately reached in the proceedings below.
Well, of course, I guess maybe that's why I'm looking at it from based on his past persecution. He spent a lot of time there, and as long as I'm not advocating this, but as long as he kept quiet and mind his own business or whatever, that nobody bothered him. And apparently he's got a lot of relatives over there who are similarly related to the brother in Saudi Arabia who seems to be the object of some ridicule. They leave them alone.
Well, we feel, Your Honor, that he established, El Saglati established past persecution through his testimony and the documentation, and that because the judge's adverse credibility finding was an error, that a well-founded fear of future persecution would have arisen from that finding, from that establishment of past persecution, and that would be the government's duty to rebut that finding as a first instance on a remand to the Board of Immigration Appeals. If there's nothing further, I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Agarwal.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, this is Ashish Agarwal for the Attorney General. I'd like to start with the adverse credibility determination. Mr. Al-Saglati's story is that the Yemeni government persecuted him because of his membership in the Yemeni Socialist Party and because he wrote letters to his brother in Saudi Arabia criticizing the Yemeni government. At a macro level, that claim is implausible, as the IJ found. The Yemeni Socialist Party, as Mr. Al-Saglati testified and as the various State Department reports confirm, is a recognized political party in Yemen that has members in the parliament. The YSP has a newspaper, and the Yemeni the Yemeni government has issued an asylum to almost all members of the opposition, southern opposition dating to the civil war of 1994. So there's really no reason at that macro level for the Yemeni government to single out Mr. Al-Saglati. Now, turning to the facts of his situation particularly, this court is right to point out that the fact that Mr. Al-Saglati had high-level employment with the government of the rank of a court administrator, which had with the equivalent of a judge, significantly undermines his claim as to past persecution. I'd like to refer this court to a recent decision that it issued in Margot versus Gonzalez that is dated April 5th, 2006, with a panel of Judges Flom, Easterbrook, and Mannion, with an opinion by Judge Mannion.
I don't think it matters who is on a particular panel or writes the opinion.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
That was
just Judge Mannion a heads up so he remembers it on
us. Just for the court's opinion, for the court's information. In that case, which involved an Iraqi woman who was claiming persecution by the Iraqi government, this court held, I'll quote briefly, "This continued government employment is an indication that she was not suffering persecution at the hands of this same government," close quote. I think that's very relevant. In addition, Mr. Al-Saglati lived in Yemen for 2 years, from almost 2 years, from 1999 to 2001, without any harassment, arrests, or persecution by the government. I'd cite to this court the Marquez case, which is cited in the government's brief. In that case, a Filipino alien stayed in the Philippines for 5 months after the alleged persecution before leaving, and the court held that 5-month interval significantly undercut his claim. Here we have an interval of almost 2 years. In addition, this court is right to point out that Mr. Al-Saglati's four sisters and parents apparently continue to live in Yemen and have never suffered any persecution or harassment at the hands of the government. And they, like Mr. Al-Saglati, are, of course, related to this brother who is in exile in Saudi Arabia. Turning very briefly to the allegation of the shooting incident in 1996, I would just point out that Mr. Al-Saglati points to no facts indicating that it was, in fact, the government that engaged in this alleged assassination attempt. Mr. Al-Saglati never saw the shooter, never heard after the fact or before the fact that the government was interested in assassinating him. And, in fact, his allegation is inconsistent with some of his own testimony, in which he claims that the government wanted to assassinate him when it had him alone, because otherwise the populace would be incited against the government. Well, when the government had him alone, they obviously didn't do a very efficient or did sort of a half-hearted job of trying to assassinate him. Finally, I'll turn briefly to the abuse of discretion point, which is to say that I think it would be a remarkable decision for this court to hold that an immigration judge abused his discretion in determining that an alien who commits fraud with U.S. immigration officials, while that alien is under no duress or threat of physical punishment, that immigration judge abused his discretion. If there are no further questions,
He does read a lot between the lines, I thought. I mean, he's assuming a lot of things. I already cited I'm not sure all of this amounted to past persecution, but and whatever he's facing there. But he's assuming an awful lot it seems. Maybe that's typical, but I don't know about what needed to be proved. The assassination attempt is alleged. You know, I guess the car is 100 meters away. What happened after that, I guess, is my next. Did he stop, turn around, and go the other way? Did he keep going and nobody did anything? And then as far as the child is concerned, this is later, and they don't know who attacked. It may have been a fight on the playground, for all we know.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much the IJ assumes in judging all this credibility, but anyway, that would be my only thought about it.
Fair enough, and Your Honor is right that there isn't as much evidence or testimony as we would perhaps like about the assassination attempt or the subsequent beating of his child. With respect to the assassination attempt, the alleged assassination attempt, Mr. Al-Saglati is asked why he thinks that it was the government who was assassinating him, who was attempting to assassinate him, and his response is, well, the government had me under surveillance. When asked, well, why do you think the government had you under surveillance? He says, well, because you know, it was easy for the government to survey me because you know, I sort of lived alone on this isolated road. There was an earlier incident, as this court may recall, where some Mr. Al-Saglati complained about some men who were standing outside of his home, and he was concerned that if he had walked outside of his home that evening, this was before the assassination attempt, they would have beaten him up. And he heard that it was he heard from friends of his that it was the government who was who had placed those men there. There's no testimony from Mr. Al-Saglati in this situation that it was the government who had it in for him and that was trying to assassinate him. So there isn't a lot of evidence there, but again, it was Mr. Al-Saglati's burden to provide that to the immigration judge. And I think that the other point I would make about that is, the assassination, the alleged attempt occurred in 1996. Mr. Al-Saglati remains in Yemen until 2001. If he was really concerned about his safety, one would have thought that he would have tried to leave a little sooner. With respect to the alleged beating of his child, all the police report says that there are unknown individuals beat his child. The immigration judge found that was not credible because that claim was not included in his asylum application, and the immigration judge concluded that was something that was added after the fact. In any case, the whole incident regarding his child goes to a well-founded fear of future persecution, not past persecution. If there's nothing else, thank the court, and I would ask it to affirm.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. You may have a few seconds left. Anything further, Mr. Reagan?
Just one brief point, Your Honors. Petitioner is not asking this court to hold that an immigration judge cannot exercise his discretion to find that a fraudulent entry creates a basis for not granting asylum on a discretionary basis, but rather that the immigration judges must apply all of the factors laid out in Matter of Chen in order to properly exercise their discretion. Petitioner contends that the IJ in this case did not do so, not that his discretion couldn't be exercised, but that he must apply all of the factors before he does so.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. We'll